Good evening and welcome. This is Yolanda McTeer. I apologize. I was trying to get my wonderful song going that I love, titled Ocean Wave by Barry Allen, but there was a little difficulty in getting it going. But nevertheless, it's not going to stop my show because we got it going, and we're going to get to it and get it going with my wonderful guest this evening. Welcome to the underworld of sharks. Professional diver Gary Atkinson is live here with me, Yolanda, on Empowering for All. Ladies and gentlemen, can I tell you that this gentleman brings to the table many years he's been in the ocean, right next to the sharks, petting them, putting them to sleep, and never has he been what we would be fearful. After retiring from decades of just living in the underworld, the sea world with the sharks, Gary doesn't stop there with the involvement with sharks. He has now become a teacher, speaker, and empowerment to those who want to grasp and learn all there is to know about the underworld of sharks. This man, ladies and gentlemen, is a force to be reckoned with. You don't want to miss this show today. And adding some more to his accolades, he is the director of the Shark Foundation, where he has funded this study for over 12 years. I'm not going to keep him holding. I see he's in queue. On time is what he does. I'm so excited and just overwhelmed that he's joined us and going to talk to us this evening. Without further delay, I'd like to welcome my guest here on Empowering for All, Mr. Gary Atkinson. Good evening, Gary. How are you?
I'm fine, Yolanda. Thank you very much for the accolades. That was very, very nice. I'm flattered. I'm embarrassed. That was very, very nice. Thank you.
No need to be. Credit given is credit you have earned without a shadow of a doubt.
Well, I appreciate that, and our environment appreciates any help that they can get. So that's hopefully the message that we want to put out there, and that's an empowerment in its own right, I would think.
Yes, most definitely. Gary, I know there's so much, you know, when we talk about sharks, we talk about the underworld, and I know being a professional that you are, there's always the key, where do we start and where do we end? So tonight, I'm going to start with the most phenomenal attraction that I have, because always when I'm able to catch Underworld Shark Show, I am glued to it. It just fascinates me so, because we know with this ferocious and fierce animal that you have taken on, and they actually, you know, they come to you, and they're compelled, and they have not, you know, bothered you. So that within itself says, hey, this man's got something we need to know about.
Well, I have to tell you that, first off, it's like any people who work with horses, for example. If you've never been around a horse, he's a large, powerful animal, and he can be very, very intimidating. And so some people are very frightened by the presence of such a large, powerful animal, and indeed never lose respect for him, as they should not. But as you work with the animal and you learn how they think and how their reactions are going to be telegraphed to you, then you become comfortable with them. And subsequently, there's really a small family of people who work with sharks around the world, scientists and handlers, and there's sort of this wealth of information amongst the people that work with sharks that understand that this is not a dumb animal. It's a pretty smart animal, and every shark we've ever worked with has its own individual personality, just like every dog or cat that you've ever owned has its own separate personality. So true with sharks. And so subsequently, the more you understand them, the more you're comfortable with them, but you never lose respect for them and their power and their grace and what they do, what their job is in the environment.
Wonderful. Now, Gary, I'm going to go all the way back to the beginning of your investment, your fascination, your commitment of loving sharks. When did this all begin for you?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, like so many people from my generation, we grew up with the Jacques Cousteau series. And I had the privilege of meeting Jacques Cousteau and working with his sons and his grandkids as well in various projects. And I think that's what planted the seed as a young kid sitting in the Midwest. And as soon as I could, I headed towards the water and ultimately got my degree in underwater technology from the Florida Institute of Technology and a degree in underwater engineering. And I was always – I saw Jaws like everybody else, and it petrified me. And I just thought, this is not good. I'm fascinated with these animals. I want to not be fearful with them. And then I met an amazing woman. Her name is Noreen Rouse, and she became my mentor when I was in my early 20s. And this lady, well up in her 40s and 50s, totally did a turnaround in her life and said, you know, she discovered the ocean at a late age, and it just so inspired her. She became one of the foremost conservationists in South Florida. And she was my mentor. And I literally walked away from a very lucrative professional diving career working in the oil industry to work with her and develop a facility in South Florida called the Scuba Club of the Palm Beaches, Noreen Rouse Scuba Club of the Palm Beaches. And it became a cornerstone of diving and conservation. And I remember the first time going down with Noreen, and we looked out at about 80, 90 feet. I see this massive hammerhead shark swimming up to us. And I took off like a shot to go swim with this shark. And I just was enthralled with the grace and power of this magnificent animal who could care less that I was there and allowed me to glide along beside him. And it wasn't until afterwards I got on the boat that I realized, my goodness, you know, what I just did. And that, I think, was the kickoff. It was always there in the back of my mind. I was always drawn to water, and I always loved diving. But that was the seed that planted it all. And from that point on, I did everything I did was around shark experiences all over the world, and pursuing them. And just I've been really blessed to dive in most all the oceans with sharks around the world now, and of course with the Shark Foundation, we educate, we fund doctoral scientists, and we do research, as much research as we can, and publish that data on sharks. And we have projects globally now. And my fun part, and my wife is also co-directs with me, we both are dive instructors as well. The fun part for us is that we go around the world to Africa and Australia and New Zealand and Fiji and so on and so forth, and we work on these projects with these scientists, tagging sharks, tracking sharks, collecting data, and the most important thing is publishing the data. It's one thing to get it. That's the fun part, getting the data. The hard part is making it say something and then publishing that data so other scientists can then build on the facts that you find. And in science, if you do it right, you create more questions, because that's what it's about. You don't have all the answers. You find some answers, and they spawn more questions so that others can then build on that. And that's how we learn. We learn about an animal that without it, our oceans die. And a lot of people don't understand that it's at the top of the food chain. And when you're an apex predator at the top of the food chain, you control the balance of everything down to the tiniest zooplankton. If you take an animal off the top of the food chain, and we've learned this horde story on land by removing large predators out of the environmental equation, and suddenly you have population explosions at different levels, and it consumes all the nutrients. So everything dies above and beneath that level because there's not enough food to support them. And if you're lucky enough in the ocean to be able to swim off and hunt hunt someplace else, that's fine. But if you can't, then you'll die. And a shark's role in the ocean is to eat the sick and healthy, and they create what's left, and the healthiest survive, the strong survive. And they balance the ecosystem subsequently by doing so. You take them off the top very quickly, in the scheme of things, the ocean dies. That's why we have big dead zones all over the planet's oceans right now, because sharks are slaughtered at close to 100 million animals a year, just
wow.
for their fins. Just for the fins, for the Asian market. And it's the shark fin is considered an aphrodisiac. It's considered a symbol of wealth in the Asian culture. And slowly that's being turned around just by virtue of the fact that the word, the Mandarin Chinese word for shark fin is shark wing, which doesn't sound so bad, does it? And in the studies that we've done, we discovered that many people in China believe that sharks regenerate their fins. So when they're caught and this animal has his fins hacked off and then his live body is dumped back in the ocean to die a horrible death, they think that he can regenerate his fins. So slowly but surely we're educating the Chinese with films in their own languages. And there's hundreds of dialects, actually. And that's a big project in its own right that we're working on. And the whole key is education. I certainly went off on a ramble there.
No, Gary, no. By no means do you feel like you are rambling. You are being informative. You're giving us some knowledge. And you're departing wisdom into the sharks. I mean, you're absolutely phenomenal. And we are tuned in and definitely want to absorb and learn this information. So feel free to, by all means, continue.
Well, of late, you know, obviously in the news, we've been hearing lots of stories of negative images of the sharks. Of course, with what's happened off of North Carolina, of most recent, the surfing contests down in South Africa, where Nick Henning was had a great white shark tangle up in his surfing ankle line a couple days ago, and that was filmed on camera, and so they get a bad rap. And I think people have to understand a couple of things. For example, what happened in North Carolina, it was the perfect storm. We have exceptionally hot temperatures. We have a lot of evaporation taking place, which has lowered, or rather increased, the salinity in the intertidal areas. Sharks like higher salinity because they're more buoyant. Sharks don't have a swim bladder like fish do, so they need that buoyancy from the excess salt. So they're going to come inshore. We had a huge migration of menhaden and other coastal species migrating down the coast very close to shore. And, of course, that attracts the food chain. The sharks are going to follow the food. It's always about the food, by the way. And then it's summertime, and we have more people in the water off the beaches at a peak season, such as this. So you have food, you have high salinity, you have good warm water. They love the warm water. And you have a lot of people in the water. It's the perfect scenario for an accident. I always tell people who go to the beach to be cognizant of their surroundings. Be aware. Mm-hmm. If you see birds feeding, the water boiling because fish are feeding, you have to think what's attracting, what that vibration in the water is attracting. Now, we know or we hear that a few drops of blood in the water will attract a shark. That's true, but it takes a very, very long time for that shark to track that trail of blood, and he does it very slowly and methodically to approach the source of the possible bleeding. But the one thing that will bring a shark in faster than anything, like a bullet, is the vibration of struggling fish. And when fish are feeding, that puts out a vibration that sharks can hear miles away, and they come in like a rocket homing in on that. And what does a swimmer sound like when he's splashing around on the surface? He's putting out vibrations. And if there's already feeding going on in that area, then the case of mistaken identity takes place. Now, one of the facts of life is that Caucasian people flashing around in the water look like the sides and the bellies of fish. And investigatory bites happen a lot because of that. Point in fact, when I set up an experience in the Bahamas that you could die with over 100 sharks, and we do this almost every day. And my Bahamian staff were all black, and they didn't have to worry about exposing any skin out there when they were working with the sharks in close proximity. I, on the other hand, had to wear gloves and a black hood over my head because of my white skin, because I didn't ever want them to mistake my hand for a piece of fish that was floating in the water column. I had I'm going to digress here. I did the Today Show and taught Al Roker how to dive. And I was doing
Wonderful.
The Today Show. And I took Al down. Al is what he is on camera, he is off camera. He's a funny, fabulous guy. And we had so much fun together. And so I took him down. And he had a wonderful experience, and we did the whole Today Show underwater. And then afterwards, you shoot what's called B-roll. And so I had my cameras out, and the B-roll is what we call the crunch and munch. You know, when you have a shark feeding on a fish or a piece of carcass, and you just put the camera right down there next to his head and his mouth while he's feeding. And my housing and my hand were bare at that time. And my housing was clear plexiglass, so it shimmers, and just like a fish struggling would. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I have sharks all over me going down because it smelled right, it looked right, and instead of biting the carcass, they bit my housing. And if it wasn't for the fact that I have very big, heavy handles on the housing, I would have probably lost my fingers on that when they bit the housing, and instead I got a few stitches on my hand. But that was with the Today Show, so we came up, and I didn't want to tell Al about it at the time. She was still a little bit nervous because we had some other dives we wanted to do, so I didn't want to tell him about it until after it was all over with. And, of course, he made a big deal about it afterwards, you know, that he cheated death, you know. But anyway, I digress. But a fabulous guy, a great guy.
Wonderful.
But anyway,
my goodness.
That's a scenario.
That was
a scenario up in North Carolina.
Okay.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I said that scenario within itself was just phenomenal. You taking, you know, Al Roker and showing him, this is how this is done, Al. Welcome to my world. Because, you know, Al is one of those who's taking people into his world, bringing them on set and everything. So that had to be really phenomenal and very, you know, just fascinating for him to be with you on the dive and see that. I could just only imagine. Now, if I had the heart, which I don't, ladies and gentlemen, I'm letting you know, I don't have the heart. I'm petrified of the sharks live face-to-face. I'm going to continue to be the viewer and get the information because I'm not going to let Gary take me on a diving lesson. That's not going to happen.
Never say never.
That's what they say.
Never
but
say
Gary,
never.
When it comes to sharks, I'm going to say, okay.
Well,
but what I do want you to shed some light on is the fascination that many people, and my listeners, of course, and for those who listen to the show, because my shows continually are broadcast and able to be heard after I broadcast them live, tell us there's different variations of sharks, because a lot of times we don't know that knowledge. We've always just been told, it's a shark. But that's not true. You have things such as a bull shark. You have a lemon shark. How many specimens of sharks are there?
There's a couple hundred, actually. The ones that you hear about the most, there's only about 12 of those, 10 to 12 of those. Those are the most common ones that we hear about. And an interesting thing by species, and it shouldn't be profound if you think about other animals in the wild kingdom. But their personalities are different from species to species. a bull shark. I work extensively with bull sharks around the world, and we published a lot of papers on bull sharks. Bull sharks have they're very comfortable. Now let me back up. All sharks have a personal space, just like people. And some people are comfortable with somebody very close to them, talking to them, and other people step back because they have a greater personal space that they're comfortable in, their comfort zone. Okay, well, it's true for sharks as well. And with a bull shark, he has a very small personal space. So a bull shark, oftentimes his behavior is interpreted as being aggressive because we feel what we don't understand. And a bull shark will come very, very close to you. I've had them press themselves to me. And it's not aggressive. They're just comfortable doing that. A lemon shark, for example, is the best, and I don't want to be anthropomorphic with this, but they have almost a feline type of a behavior pattern. And that's the one shark, actually, that if I've ever had any problems with a shark, it's been with a lemon shark. They're a little sneaky, and I've been in situations where we just had to literally go back to back with another diver just to watch, because we had so many lemon sharks around us that they would sneak up and mouth your fins or whatever to see what they were, and you had to kind of be aware of that. They have a very sharp pointed tooth. A lot of people don't realize that every shark species has its own shape of tooth. So you can identify a shark just by its teeth alone. It's based on what kind of food that they like to eat. Great whites, of course, they're the apex of all apex predators, and they seem to know it. And I've worked a lot with great whites. I've never used a cage except as a prop in a film with National Geographic or Discovery Channel or something like that. But great whites also have a small personal space, and they'll come very, very, very close to you because they know that they are the biggest, baddest thing in the ocean, and they're comfortable with that. But they're also very, very curious. And when I work with great white sharks in Africa, for example, I never wear a black wetsuit because that's what a seal is black, and I don't want to ever in silhouette be mistaken, a case of mistaken identity. So my wetsuit would be bright neon green, and I've had a massive great white swim up to me and just stop, put on the brakes and stop, and literally physically shake, and I guess it was something I was wearing, but they would circle me in total confusion because they'd never seen anything like that. Sharks see color just like we do, and they can see, great whites can see above the water as well as they can beneath the water. And one of the things that great whites do is that they spy hop. They can actually stick their head out of the water and look around, and they'll do that. For example, in South Africa, where there's a lot of seal islands, and they'll spy hop to see what's going on the shoreline, see if any young seals are straying too far away from the island that they can maybe ambush them. So they're kind of clever. I've had great white sharks actually curious about the boat that I'm working on sit there and spy hop with us beside the boat, watching us all day. And it was curiosity. It wasn't aggression. It wasn't, I want to eat you mentality. It's just they're very curious. And they have to. Sharks have great taste buds behind their teeth, and they don't have hands, so they can't flipper things to see what they are. So they have to mouth it to see what it is. And one of the best tools I use when I'm working with sharks, of course, is my cameras. And I've had many of my cameras mouthed because they want to see what it is. Or my fins. I've had my fins grabbed, and I've been pulled around by my fin a few times. And I had to bop them over the head with a camera to get them to let go.
Oh my goodness! Wow!
But anyway.
Gary, that's where it gets into. No, I'm thinking I'm gonna get ate up, and then I'm gonna be like, I got to go. It's time to wave bye bye to the sharkies. So that is wow. I mean, you did say it nippled on your fins too. I mean, that's like on you. You at no given time, once again, I commend you. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard there was no fear there. He said, they nibbled on my fin and they let go, and you know, without a shadow of a doubt, most people would have been like, okay, I'm going to die. The shark just nibbles on me. That's what sharks do. They begin to just open the mouth, and then we don't see anything else. because what they're looking at when they open their mouth, it's going bye-bye in the belly.
Yeah, let me show you some things. Share some things with you about the intelligence of this animal. I worked with another marvelous lady scientist who unfortunately just passed away last year. Just a wonderful mentor as well. And I must say, you know, in my career, I have to back up here for a second. I've had so many empowered women influence me in my life. And
wonderful.
Jeannie, Dr. Jeannie,
you know,
Park
I'm
going to
say shout out
to
the empowerment. Yes, for the women. Yay.
Absolutely. 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 I owe so much to magnificent free thinking women. And Dr. Jeannie Clark came out and we worked together on with my 100 and so some odd sharks in the Bahamas. We set up an apparatus where we basically taught one of my sharks, a Caribbean reef shark, to punch the right colored button and get a food reward. We set this up underwater. And that was pretty amazing that we could even teach a shark to do that. And then about 6 months later, we came back and we set up that same apparatus. And immediately, without any hesitation, that shark came and punched the right colored button for a food reward. What blew us all away was that many, many of my other sharks came and punched the right colored button for food. We hadn't worked with any of them. So mm-hmm. there's a sharing of information there, you know, that they conveyed that information to each other on how to get this food reward. Now, this has been taken to another level now. For example, in the Rotterdam Aquarium in Europe, they now have taught their sharks in their aquariums to self-medicate and take their own medication by punching. Each one has his own different colored button, and they know which one they're to punch, and they punch that button, and they get their medication if they're sick or whatever. So they self-medicate that way. That's pretty amazing in its own right.
It is.
Yeah, it is. I have another friend of mine. Well, he's one of the former scientists, Dr. Sonny Gruber. We fund a huge project, a lemon shark project off the coast of Florida, and we've gotten lemon sharks protected now in the state waters of Florida and hammerheads, and we're working on bull sharks next to get them protected in Florida state waters. But on a study that we're doing, and there's an area off of Jupiter, Florida, that there's a large aggregation of lemon sharks. I think I gave you a picture of me laying down next to one of those lemon sharks.
Yes, you did, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
That picture, trust me, my audience, for all of you, where our switchboard is lit up, and I thank my audience so much for the support, and for those who will see it as well. That picture will be, of course, on Twitter. It will be on Facebook, and I'll be continuously posting it so you all can see. And that picture within itself, Gary, is just outstanding. I mean, because you literally have your hand on this shark. As if it's,
yes.
And the shark is such a piece. It doesn't even flinch that you're there.
And that's what's amazing, because nobody had ever encountered this. This is at about 130 feet on the bottom, and there's dozens of those lying around with their head into the current. We've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in research on this, tagging and tracking them. And it's not a mating scenario. It's not a food incentive. We actually think that it's an aggregation that happens annually in the early part of the winter, and we think that they actually are pairing up, meeting mates, and then they go
okay.
someplace else to mate, and that's our theory right now. But as I said earlier, the beauty of science is it generates more questions, and so that's what's happening here. But as a result of the data that we collected on this huge aggregation, we now have them protected, because it is the only largest population that we know of around the United States of lemon sharks. So we've got them protected now in the state of Florida. So that's kudos to the work of Dr. Sonny Gruber. But what I wanted to say also is that Sonny wanted to test the intelligence of the lemon shark, and he set up a maze with a food reward, and he would let the lemon shark go, and the lemon shark would make multiple attempts until he finally figured out the maze to get the food reward. In the pan beside this lemon shark was another lemon shark. Then Sonny would take that lemon shark and put him in the pan with the maze. And immediately, with no hesitation, that shark would work the maze and get the food reward. So he watched the other shark. He learned quickly how to process that maze. And without any hesitation, he worked it out. So, again, that goes back to the intelligence of an animal that we oftentimes underestimate, I think, how clever they can be.
Most definitely. Now, Gary, I want to go into the birth process, because when we see these big, huge creatures, you know, the manifestation for them to grow into the hugeness that they are comes from something very small. So what is the birth process once the female is impregnated? How long does it take for the shark to be born, and how long does it take for it to become that huge?
Okay, good question. And there's a lot of questions in there that we don't know. Okay, but this is what
okay.
we do know. Let's talk about the most common species, and that would be the top 10, the hammerheads, the bull sharks, lemon sharks, great whites, and so on and so forth. Those are the ones most people we call them the pelagic species. They're the ones most people are familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Most female sharks, in a perfect world, if nutrient base is good and sustainable, will produce a litter of pups every 2 years. A litter of pups could be anywhere from a dozen in a hammerhead, for example, or 15 or so in a hammerhead, or to maybe 5 or 6 in a lemon shark. Same in a bull shark, and so on and so forth. And great whites, we don't know that much about great whites, quite honestly. We're not even 100% sure where they mate yet. We suspect from the tagging that we've done, that they're mating deep, 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 1,000 feet of water or more in the Gulf of Mexico, in the area of where the Deep Horizon oil well blew up, actually.
Oh, wow.
In that region there. And we suspect that that's been impacted because of that oil spill, by the way. In California, the great whites there go out to an area that we call the Cafe in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, halfway between Hawaii and California. They seem to congregate there, and then they disperse out. Many go to Hawaii, and many go south into Mexico, and then others go north up the coast of the United States. And we believe that's happening there, the mating. But we seldom ever find great whites with mating bites on them. And in the mating process, the male will bite the pectoral fin of the female and hold on to her, and then he'll mate with her. Oftentimes, another male will help hold her by blocking her forward motion to make it easier for the mating process to take place. So the gestation after the mating's taken place is generally, just like people, about 9 to 10 months, roughly. And then they'll go ahead and give birth. Now, some species, and this is not so nice, but some species, when the newborn pup hatches out in an egg case inside the female shark, whoever hatches out first will eat his siblings. And if there's 2 horns to the uterus, then subsequently there will be 2 or 3 pups born, because they consumed whoever was slow bloomers inside the mother. And she'll go ahead and pass them in live birth. Now, those pups, when they're born, for example, let's take a lemon shark. She'll take them into an area that they know that there's a good nutrient base and that there's enough food there the size of their mouth to support them. Because once that pup is born, the mother, they're on their own. They hit the ground running, and the mother will not recognize her young thereafter. And so they'll go up into mangrove areas. So it's very protected because a small shark is also part of the food chain to other predators. So he's going to go up that mangrove area where there's lots of roots and lots of fish, and he's going to eat small stuff the size of his mouth. What a lot of people don't realize, and this is why sharks are in trouble, is that 75% of newborn sharks die in the first year of life. They die from predation, other animals feeding on them, from starvation because of environmental encroachment, habitat destruction, not enough nutrient to support them. 75% of them die in the first year of life. It takes about 15 years for a shark to reach sexual maturity. So they've got a long, long ways to go before they can even produce their own offspring, and they don't produce that many. So subsequently, that's why sharks are endangered around the world. When 100 million are taken annually, globally, they don't recover very fast. It takes them a long time to recover. Great whites will have maybe one or two pups. Tiger sharks, maybe one or two pups. And bears are a little bit larger. Tiger sharks tend to, from what we just recently learned, tend to have their pups in deeper water, and the pups are at least a couple feet long, sometimes even up to a meter in length, depending on the size of their parents. So when they hit the ground running, they got to be looking over their shoulder a lot too, because they're on the food chain of everything as well. So it's not an easy world out there.
I see, and once again, that is so informative to know, because that's always been a curiosity with myself, and I'm sure many of the listeners, how does this creature come to life? I mean, because when you see them, you're just fascinated. I mean, because they're just consumed within their own realm. And you ask yourself, wow, how does this all come to life? If it continues to flow every day in life, is such, and like you said, instantaneously, things that they're attracted to, color, the smell of blood, and they come rushing. What is the fastest speed, Gary? That's a question that comes to mind. What is the fastest speed a shark can go? I mean, you know, we see the movies, and we know a lot of times movies are, you know, a little bit elevated. But what is actually the fastest speed that a shark can get to its prey?
Well, if they're motivated, they can come rocketing in very quickly. Miles per hour, I couldn't even begin to guess. The fastest shark in the ocean, however, is the Mako shark. And he's extremely fast. And he's in the Mako shark is in the same family as the great white. And they have, to understand the propulsion of these sharks, you have to look at the tails. And if you look at the tail of a great white or the tail of a Mako shark, it looks like the tail of a tuna fish, actually, only much larger. And that is a very, very powerful tail that allows for speed. Tuna are incredibly fast fish in the ocean. And so these sharks also are highly, highly explosive and very, very fast. And the reason for that is, for example, the great white is an ambusher. And if he sees something on the surface and he deduces that it's food or he believes it's food, then he'll come rocketing up. He'll commit to an explosive accelerated speed to impact that animal either at the head or the tail. He'll either want to remove its cognitive capability or remove its propulsion. Now, one or the other is going to allow him then to feed on it after it's weakened. And with a Mako shark, his favorite food is billfish, is swordfish, is sailfish, is marlin. And so what he'll do, because he's very, very fast, he'll take the tail off on a strike, and then they're crippling that animal. So then he can come back and safely feed on it. When I say safely, a lot of people don't realize that all sharks have what's called a nictitating membrane. That it's an eyelid that comes from the bottom up. So when they blink from the bottom up. And it's kind of white, opaque, and it covers the eye. And the reason they do that is because they want to protect. If a shark loses even one eye, he loses his depth perception. If he loses his depth perception, he will slowly starve to death because he can't feed anymore. Very well, anyway. So he needs to protect that eye. So the eyelid protects the eye on these impacts. So they have to impact so quickly, so ambushing, and so explosively that they got to ensure that nothing's going to hurt them, you know, afterwards, so they can come back and feed. One of the things that you hear most about on sharks is the sensitivity of the nose, the snout. They have in their snout something called ampullae of Lorenzini. And these ampullae are amazing receivers of scent, of vibration, of electrical energy. A shark senses weak prey by the dimming of its aura. And we all, you, I, we all have an energy field around us. We have an aura. Someone who's had an injury or lost a limb, for example, has a break in their energy field and their aura. A shark can go out and he'll swim around and he'll sense that a fish is getting old or weak or infirm, and that's what he'll go after and consume, and that's his job. They're always leaving the healthiest. And so so it's all about that energy field. I had I oftentimes took down double amputees, single amputees on dives. I took quadriplegics, paraplegics, and on my sharks, with my sharks, and it was always amazing to me that the sharks knew right away. And it wasn't in an aggressive way, but they would come over in a very curious manner, bump and nuzzle the place where a limb should have been on a person. I have a titanium shoulder because of, I had a shark hit the front of my camera and shattered my shoulder one time on a film. And when I got back in the water for the first time, immediately my sharks all came and they started bumping and nuzzling my shoulder because there was a new break in my aura and my energy field around me. And it wasn't, again, they didn't want to bite me, but they were curious as to what that was. So that all comes about from the ampullae of Lorenzini that senses that electrical field. A shark can sense a car battery 20 miles away in the water. He's that sensitive and home in on it. Hammerheads. Hammerhead's a very distinctive shark. It's a very unusual-looking shark. And a lot of people ask me, what's the story with the hammerhead? Well, this is what we know. Hammerhead's favorite food is stingray. And where do stingrays live but buried in the sand, hidden? So how does he find that stingray? If you ever watch a hammerhead swim, he swims with a very exaggerated wag of his head and torso, and it's like his head is a big metal detector, and he's scanning the sand. And when he detects a ray beneath the sand, then quickly his head is kind of narrowed at the front like a shovel. He'll flush that ray out, and then he'll go after it, and he'll bite off one wing of the ray to cripple it so that it has to swim in a circle, and then he can feed on it as it weakens safely without being hurt. Now, why are the eye stalks way out on the end of a hammerhead's head? Because of the stingray barb. Again, remember what I said about the eyes needing to be protected? And so I can't tell you how many hammerheads I've encountered with stingray barbs all around the front of their heads from the rays that they've eaten, and the rays flip the barb up and stick them. But they protect the eye because they don't want the eye to be damaged because it would cost them their life ultimately. And so that's why a hammerhead has his head shaped the way it is. It's based on the type of food that he eats. And if you understand the power of a stingray barb, Steve Irwin, crocodile hunter, he was killed by the barb of a stingray.
He was.
Yes. And the thrust from one of these animals is so explosive and so powerful. And unfortunately, that's what kills Steve. I worked with Steve in Fiji on a project with our bull sharks. And he was just a remarkable, hilariously fun guy to be around and be with. And 1 year to the day that he was killed, I was actually in the same bay where he was at the previous year tagging tiger sharks. And the reason the tiger sharks are there is because those rays, the cow nose rays, are in mating in that area. And, of course, follow the food, the sharks follow the rays. And we had hammerheads and tiger sharks there. And that's what actually he and Philippe Cousteau, my friend Philippe Cousteau, were there to film that. And they went out on a day to shoot B-roll. And that's they were just waiting for another crew member to show up. And Ben Kropp was the cameraman with him, and working with the ray, and it was just a simple, silly, simple swim with a ray. But unfortunately, inadvertently, Steve crowded the animal into shallow water with his body blocking his exit. Ben was in front filming, and the animal panicked, and he threw his barb, and unfortunately, and we know what happened. It killed Steve, and the barb went in him. He actually pulled the barb out. Had he left the barb in, he probably would have survived. But he'd been pulling the barb out. He actually pulled the hole out in his heart because the barb has reverse hooks in it, and it takes tissue out with it. Really, the only way to get it out is to have it surgically removed. But anyway, that's the sad story of Steve on that one. But the barb
definitely
is toxic and powerful.
Truly missed man and gone too soon. But
absolutely,
he definitely had an impact, like you have, you know, in the underworld. His arena was, you know, with all animals. Yours being with sharks, but once again, we as a society are so grateful for you all embarking on this journey and letting us into the unknown, because the underworld is the unknown. It's something that most don't want to because of fear. You've taken the initiative of not having that fear. Your great mentors, we thank them for bringing you in, and it's been such a great deposit in your life, and then for you to be able to empower and give back and give us that knowledge, I think it's just wonderful. Now, the next question I have, and I'm not going to detain you. We can go on and on, ladies and gentlemen, but I do have to let Gary go because my show will end as well. Look, I have a little more time here, so while I have him, I'm going to try and get everything in I can think of and let him share a few more things with us as well. Gary, what is the feared animal of that shark's fear? Because this ferocious animal, everything fears it. What animal does the shark fear? Is there one?
Well, if he's smart, he'll fear man. That's the most dangerous animal in the sea. There's a number of cartoons out about there's one poster I saw recently showed a great white swimming next to a diver, and the caption said, "This man has been responsible for terrorizing whole communities and the deaths of hundreds of people around the world." And the other one swims in the sea, you know, and eats fish. And the point being, obviously, man is probably the worst animal out there. And knowledge is the only thing that's going to fix that. Understanding and knowledge. Sharks fear one another. If there is any such thing as fear, if you understand it's instinctual and caution, they're always cautious. A shark will always bump and nuzzle something, generally 99.9% of the time, before he'll ever do an investigatory bite. Because he's cautious, he doesn't want to get hurt. He's afraid of, like I mentioned earlier, the eyes, for example. So he's going to be cautious about that. He's curious, mm-hmm. but he's cautious. So it depends a little bit on species too. There's so many stories of people lost at sea. There's some horror stories out there about the Indianapolis. That was a World War II ship that was sunk, and many of the crew were killed and injured by sharks. And that species is a deep water pelagic shark called an oceanic whitetail. And that is an animal, when they're out in the deep water, there's not as much nutrient out there. So anything that's out there bobbing around is fair game. So I always tell people, when you go to the beach, try not to look like the food. I always told my surfing friends, it's one thing to be sitting on your board in your shorts with your white feet hanging over the side. Why can't you put on some nylon boots? It has the same great traction on the board, and there'll be less incidence of a shark seeing something white flashing in murky water and biting it. Case is mistaken identity. I have a lot of my friends tease me about this. You can't pay me enough money to go to a beach in murky water to go splash around and swim. Because in a shark's world, anything on the surface is possibly food. For example, tiger sharks, their favorite food is turtles. Turtles go to the surface for a breath of air. They sleep on the surface oftentimes, and that's exactly where the shark's going to find them. What does a diver look like or a surfboard look like on the surface in silhouette? In Hawaii, we have incidents every year of tiger sharks biting people on a board, and it's generally this time when the turtles are coming in to nest and lay eggs and also mate. And that's when the tiger sharks follow the food. They come in. So the surfers are more vulnerable in that time of year, floating around on the surface, because that's what they look like. So I always tell people, try not to look like the food. But, you know, I want to say this, too, about your show, Yolanda, about empowerment. Whether it's about the ocean, whether it's about conservation, whether it's about the love of people, or the love of your sport, it's the energy that you commit to that. I've worked with you a long time, and I watched you, and I watched the energy that you share with others. I see you work with people on the phone in problem situations. I see how you work with your colleagues, and it's the same empowerment, whether it's a passion for people, whether it's a passion for your job, whether it's a passion for a sport, or conservation or whatever. That's the key to, I think, a full life. And that's the empowerment and the motivation that I think everybody should have, or hopefully find that key in their heart and move forward in their life and make a footprint.
Oh, my goodness.
It's only here for a while.
You've
got to make a footprint.
You're going to bring tears to my eyes. Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much. What a great and just outstanding compliment. And ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you, it's one of those things. I'm just being me, and it just soothes to know, you know, Gary, like you said, he and I work together. You know that people are able to see the realness and Yolander being Yolander, and now he coming on my show, understanding why it was embedded in my spirit to title my show "Empowering for All." I'm just honored and very blessed, and I've been on now for over a year. And I, ladies and gentlemen, he will tell you, I'm Nick Daddy. I'm Nick Daddy, who's a busy man. And I said, Gary, you have to come on the show. You have to come on the show. So I once again want to tell you, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule, because I know after work your schedule doesn't stop. But you made the commitment, you came on, and you shared as my guest. And once again, thank you so much for the compliment to me. It means everything. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And it's been a real pleasure. And anytime, by all means.
Yes, you have to come back. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the sad time is we're winding down and Gary has to go. But it's never a goodbye, I always say, until the next time. But Gary, before you go, will you share with the audience, for those who are listening and for those who will listen after the show has aired, how can they, if they want to fund the Shark Foundation, find out more about it and so forth, and what can we expect from you in the future? Are you ever going to go back in the water again? That's always a key question I'm sure the audience wants to know. Will Gary ever dive again?
Oh, absolutely. 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 Well, I appreciate you that opportunity to share that. You can go online to www.sharks.ch. And that's our foundation is funded from a large Swiss group of industrialists who donate a tremendous amount of funding to our research and science grants that we have all over the world. And as far as our projects, I've got a huge project with the lemon sharks, right? I set off in the state of Florida. I have another one down in the Dry Tortugas on mating of nurse sharks. I've got in Naples, Florida, we have a ongoing 10-year study now on bull shark pups. I have a massive project in Fiji where we have literally turned the economy around in the villages, and now we have several hundred square miles of protected reef in Fiji that is our own scientific backyard. On any dive, you can see 8 to 10 species of shark on any single dive, which is there's no place in the world like that. We fund a tremendous amount of research with manta rays, which are also in the shark family, off of the coast of Africa, Mozambique, and also whale shark studies in Mozambique, and we've got them protected now off the coast of Mozambique. The problem in a third world country, however, is they don't have the funds to protect their own waters, to create a navy to protect their own waters. So that's a slow, slow process. What we've done in Fiji, for example, is set up a fund where we have trained park rangers now, and we give them the boats and the vessels and the training and the knowledge to go out there and protect their own waters and protect the sharks. So we have projects going around the world. And in every one of them, when I'm not doing what you and I do every day here, I'm out in the ocean someplace in New Zealand or Australia or Fiji or Africa.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, Gary, once again, thank you for gracing us with this great interview, taking the time out once again of your busy schedule. I'm actually going to stay on live and share a few more things with upcoming things here in Empowerment, but I'm going to say goodbye, good night, and don't ever be a stranger. If you ever want to come on and give us some more informative information, just let me know. The door is open to you. Shout out to your lovely wife, Brenda, who I hear so much about, and I know she's, you know, an empowerment and a joint woman of passion and love connected to you, and it radiates day in and day out. And audience, let me tell you this as well before I let Gary go. It was like he complimented me. Gary is a very, very, with all these accolades and all that he's done, you would never know this. This man just generates nothing but humbleness. Personality is just great, a very, very receptive man, but very dedicated to what he does. And I respect you for that. So once again, I say thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. And you have a wonderful evening. And I wish you well. I look forward to seeing you soon. Good night.
All right. Good night, Gary. We'll talk soon. Ladies and gentlemen, it has been such an honor here tonight in Empowering for All with my guest. Professional diver Gary Atkinson has been talking with us and gracing us with his presence tonight here at Empowerment, giving us such an informative insight to the underworld of sharks. And for those of you who missed this interview, don't be dismantled. Don't be upset. All my shows can be heard after they broadcast. No worries. All of my shows are available on my website, www.ymcteerempowerment4all.com, blogtalkradio.com/ymcteerempowerment4all, TuneIn Radio, Windows Store Podcast, Blueberry.com, and many other outlets. It is such an honor when I have the awesome people that grace the presence of my show. Now added is Gary Atkinson. It is a wonderful place to be in your life when you're living your dream. This radio show has always been my dream. The door was opened for me over a year ago, and I say thank you, Lord. Only one person opened that door and continues to manifest and elevate my show, and I thank God for it every day. Now, many of you are trying to figure out, who am I? Because you may be just tuning in and getting connected with Empowerment for All. Find out more about me. Buy my book, an autobiography written by me, titled The Tragic Times of a Woman, by Yolanda McTeer. That book is available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, my website, through the Barnes & Noble's link, and many other outlets. Those of you who want to keep up with what's going on at Empowerment for All, Follow me on Twitter, at capital Y, capital M, lowercase c, capital T, I, E, R. Facebook, Evangelist Yolanda McTeer. Instagram, Evangelist Y McTeer. One thing for sure, every day that you wake up, say thank you. It is another day that should be filled with grace, love, and gratitude. Many wish they could walk out of the hospital. Many wish they could see. Many wish they had their limbs. Many wish for the small things that we take for granted every day. But remember, you have those things, so embellish love and give love. Every day won't be a good day. And even when we get out of our flesh, because things aggravate us and agitate us and upset us, what we quickly have to do is rejuvenate ourselves and say, you know what? This is just an obstacle. It too shall pass. It too shall pass. And things will come to the realm of peace and humbleness again. For those people who come into your life who don't even know what love is, kindness, gratitude, continue to give out what lies within you, happiness, love, accepting, not judging, and being a trophy that they can see. If this individual can portray all of this, I need to get in me what they got in them. And that's what I do continuously through my radio show. And as you heard my guest compliment me, I do it every day at work because I am keeping it real. I'm going to go to a break, and I'm going to come back, and I'm going to pray. I never end my show without prayer because prayer is what keeps us. Prayer is what takes us where we need to be. I'll be back in a moment. To let you listen to just a little ocean music with the call of seagulls. That is an honor to my guest, professional diver in the underworld of the ocean. Gary, that quick segment of music was dedicated to you. Now I'm going to play one of my favorites, country singers, with this song was granted a whole month and played as an intro, Miss Krista Earle. I'll be back in a moment.
My direction didn't always point true north, but you had a way of keeping me on course. Your faith in me is what I'm thankful for. Even when we're not together, I can hear your voice as clear as ever, telling me or never. If you didn't believe in me, I wouldn't be here now. If you didn't believe in me, my dreams would still be down. Without your love to lift me up, I'd be a diamond in the rough. If you didn't believe, the road is so long, this ain't the place where you belong. You stood by me and helped me to hold on. Now I finally found the key that opens up my destiny.
Welcome back to Yolander McTeer's radio show, Empowering for All. It is always a sad time to say goodbye. Well, I never say goodbye. I always say good night into the next time. If you missed a great show, you have to hear it. Tonight, Tuesday, July 28th, 2015, my special guest and my colleague. He is the underworld of sharks, professional diver Gary Atkinson. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, this man is a force to be reckoned with. He has brought so much to the underworld. And Gary, I say thank you for your continuous studies and contributions, even going forward, being the director of the Shark Foundation. You are appreciated, and you will have to grace the audience again by stopping by soon on Empowering for All. For those of you who may want to hear the show again, don't hesitate. It's always available on my website. It will be there by tomorrow, www.ymcteerempowermentforall.com. And also, you'll be able to hear other shows with famous celebrities that have stopped by and blessed my show here at Empowering for All. Follow me on Twitter at capital Y, capital M, lowercase c, capital T, I-E-R. Instagram, Evangelist Y. McTeer. Facebook, Evangelist Yolanda McTeer. My biggest love of all three of those social medias and my biggest traffic is on Twitter. I'm a Twitter guru. Instagram, I haven't got into. I don't take pictures all the time, so I'm a little lazy and not a lot of followers there. Facebook, I'm neutral because it's been around for so long. But once again, to find out consistently what's going on and who's coming on my show, Twitter is where you need to find me. Continuous hugs and kisses to my audience, my listeners. I've been blessed that I now have listeners in London. My switchboard was lit up tonight, supporting my shows. Thank you so much. Once again, I know a lot of times my shows have gaps. It's not intentional. I work my regular job, 60-hour weeks, and my commitment is when I give my all. So when I bring it to you, I give you my best. And for that, and you being patient and continuously supporting my show, be sure to buy my book. Get your copy. Thank you all so much for those who already have bought my book and continuously buy my book and give me feedback via email of how it helps you, it helps a loved one, and it was an impartation. The book is an autobiography that I wrote myself, and I've titled it The Tragic Times of a Woman, because it will take you through the seasons in my life where I had to go through to get to. It wasn't always a blissful day, but I said, Lord, you're going to continuously make the way. So once again, get your copy soon. I never end my show without prayer. Tonight will be Psalms 11, 1 through 7. In the Lord I put my trust. How can you say to my soul, flee as a bird to your mountain? For look, the wicked bend their bow. They make ready their arrow on the string, that they may shoot secretly at the upright in heart. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold. His eyelids test the sons of men. The Lord tests the righteous, but the wicked and the one who loves violence, his soul hates. Upon the wicked he will rain coals, fire and brimstone and a burning wind shall be the portion of their cup. For the Lord, oh yes, for the Lord is righteous. He loves righteousness. His countenance beholds the upright. Once again, that was Psalms 11. Thank you all tonight for tuning in. Until next time, here at Empowering for All, this is Yolanda McTeer saying thank you and good night. Thank you.
Right.